Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 10, delivered on February 14, 2013. The title of this lecture is Metrics of Risk.
Today, Metrics of Risk. I gave you a measure of risk in the last class. That was beta. You remember the beta is the the systematic risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. Now, on the first exam, I have an essay question section. You choose four or five answers, and they are one sentence answers in my first essays that you give me. So if you go five times around the barn until you get to the outhouse, you've blown it. So if I say, what is beta? You say to me, beta measures the systematic risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. And you will make my heart warm and my pants damp if you do that. I warn you that I actually have a bullshit stamp. I also ordered a WTF stamp. I'm so excited about that. Do not try to get the stamp just so that you can put it on Facebook and get cred, okay? Honestly, your answers are one sentence. The reason I do that is this. When you get out there in the business world, communication is going to be one of the most important things that you can have in your portfolio. When a boss asks you, well, for a piece of information, you say it quickly, succinctly, grammatically correctly, and then you move on. If you start writing essays and thesis papers in a business environment, that gets you into trouble. No one wants to read it. Because to give you an idea, just this morning, the number of email messages I had in my inbox was 107. So I don't have time for a lot of long-winded explanations. I had someone give me way too much detail about some physical problems, and I didn't want to read it, but I did because it was damn fascinating. But anyway, thank you. Some of these aren't going to get any until they're like 30 or 40, I'll tell you. Oh, that was, he was talking about the papers, okay. Now, beta, again, beta, just say it like this. Beta is the systematic risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. But beta is only one measure of risk. Now, interestingly, we need to know risk for different kinds of activities in business or things in business. Like a security, beta is our chief measure of risk. Now, you can get other measures. Everyone's trying to sell you this, that, or the other. Well, this is my own personal measure of risk. Really, beta is still the industry standard. But what if you are in a company and you want to analyze the places where risk is happening? Risk is not the worst thing in the world, but it helps you to understand your sources of risk and whether those sources of risk are what you want. Remember, the only way you are going to get an expected return is if you bear risk. That doesn't mean that you have to bear all kinds of different risks. Now, in a company, and I'll start it like this. The way we measure risk is by projecting what the possibilities of what is going to happen for, say, the next year, as far as revenues go. And then we say, well, percentage of our revenues that are cost of goods sold or this. And we can work our way down to what we call pro forma financial statements. In other words, projection financial statements. Okay, based upon this possible outcome and the percentages of that revenue that we incurred over the last year, the last couple of years, we can build our way down an entire set of financial statements that are like a projection of the future. Now, are those going to happen or not? Well, that's another matter entirely. But what that gives us the ability to do is to look at volatility of the outcomes. What is happening as we go down a financial statement? Is the volatility of revenue magnifying? So in other words, if there is a little bit of up and down possibility of revenue, does that get worse and worse by the time we get to the net income, or does it get less and less? And if it's getting worse and worse, why is it? What is it that's causing that? Is it our expenses, like our operating expenses, or is it our interest expenses? What's creating the risk? So at the top line, and we'll go back through this. I'm going to layer this. So this first part is sales risk. Okay, and risk here is volatility. Okay, then we go down and we're going to have the minus cost of goods sold. And then that will give us our gross risk. And then we're going to subtract out our expenses. And that will give us net, remember that was what we called operating income, EBIT. In terms of risk, this is what we call business risk. So our first order of business is to say, all right, how much business risk did we have? Well, how much sales risk did we have? Is there more business risk when we get to that line than there was sales risk? If there was, we know something about what is creating that magnification. So if I said that the business risk was, let's say, 25.2%, but my sales risk was, let's say, 10.6%, I know that there was some kind of a factor in here. And I'll tell you what it is in a while. But I know that there's something going on inside here that is creating an extra amount of business, of risk. And that's 0.6, 14.6%. This thing right here, we call this operating leverage. It's the amount by which the lever is lifting business risk up over sales risk. That's why we call it leverage, operating leverage. Because it is actually lifting the risk of sales up higher by the time we get to our operating income. And then I'm going to take out my interest expense, and that gives me my EBIT. And whatever this, this EBT, this is a risk right here. That risk right there, let's say that is 30.0%. That would tell me that my interest expense, the amount of money I was paying for interest, created a kind of leverage that is different from the leverage that happened up here. We call this financial leverage, this amount in here, 4.8%. Financial leverage. So that one up there was operating leverage. This is financial leverage. Now I'm going to go back through here. Don't sweat if you don't exactly see what I'm going on about here. But the point is that this helps us to answer some questions about why is it that net income is swinging the way it is? It has so much volatility. It is because of these different risk components that are leveraging the sales risk upward, maybe even downward, you never know, along the way, through the meat grinder. Now let's talk about risk. Let's talk about volatility. Like I said, we have to create a what-if scenario. We usually spread the possibilities out like this. I'm going to say something about this in a minute. But some companies go into just a whole range of possible outcomes for the next year. They go 10, 20, 30. Realistically, though, it's a good balancing act would be to say that we have, let's break it down into five possibilities. And then we assign a probability to each of them. So let's say that our revenue, sales revenue for last year was, $50,000. So now we're going to look at what could possibly happen next year. Well, we could have a great year, big expansion. And so we could have $80,000 in revenue next year. We could also have an absolute butt bath next year. And we could have 30,000. We could also have a pretty good year next year, in which case we'd have 70,000. Or we could have a kinda bad and have 40,000. Or we could have sort of like a meh. I'm sorry, I screwed that up. Put these at 50,000, not paying attention, and 40,000. Sorry about that. Now we have to assign probabilities to these things happening. So I'm going to say that this really bad year would have a 0.10 probability of happening, symmetric with a 0.10 probability of a great year. Now, pretty good year, that's a 20% chance of that happening, as is a kind of bad year, 20%, 20%. And then that meh year, yeah, sales grew, but wasn't spectacular. That's a 40% probability. This is where you have to really, it's almost like snake charming. You're going to be bitten no matter what you do. You know, the numbers aren't going to come out the way you said they could have, but that's just the way life is, you know. There's not much you can do about it. I'm going to kill this off here. That's making that murky as hell. That's a little better. Okay. So now we've got what we call a probability distribution. You notice that the probabilities exhaust the event space. In other words, there's a 1.00, 100% chance of one of these scenarios occurring. And you can be assailed. I mean, when you do this kind of projection, you're going to have someone after the fact say, you know what, you were so stupid the way you did that. And you say, well, you know, bite me. This was our forecast. This was our projection of what could be. And it's better than just saying, well, we know it's going to be one number. We're going to lay out a set of probabilities. Now, here's the deal with why I'm doing it this way, is that in this way, the reason we set it up this way is this. We're creating the discrete version of a normal distribution, which has some very nice properties. And some of those properties are going to make the calculation of what we're doing today a lot easier, because you have to do only really half of the calculations, because the other half are the same. And that saves a lot of calculator work. But look, Here's the thing, though, is that we're going to need two metrics, the mean of this distribution and the standard deviation of this distribution. And once we have those, we're in business for some things that we might really care about here. One thing that I do know for a fact is once I've set this up, used my best estimates, gotten some external data to help me out with this, some economic analysis of what future trends are, and all that, I know a couple of things. Whatever the center of the distribution is, from the center plus one standard deviation down to the center minus one standard deviation, there's a 67% chance that that's going to happen. Somewhere in there, my sales actually will be. I know that for a fact. That's probability theory. Where did you get that 67%? That's probability theory. So once I get the mean and the standard deviation, I take the mean minus the standard deviation, and then I take the mean plus the standard deviation. I know in that spread of revenues, there's a 67% chance we'll land next year. I know even more than that. I know that in the region from that mean up two standard deviations down to that mean minus two standard deviations, in that spread, there is a 95% chance that my actual revenues will fall in there somewhere next year. There's a 95% chance in that spread. I know even one more thing, too. From the mean clear out three standard deviations to the mean down three standard deviations, there's a 99% chance that my revenues will actually land in there. There's a 99% chance. So what this does is it begins to give me a handle on where I expect to land. So in other words, if I were to say, well, let me do it for this company. Let me just show you. Now we're going to do the mean. All you do for the mean is just take each of the values times the probability. To write it in fancy notation, it is the sum from k equals 1 to n of the probability of the kth event times the revenue of the, and we'll put it as cash flow, of that event. That makes it look real fancy so you can leave your notebook open and people will be really impressed by what you're doing. In practice, what that would mean is, in this case, I'd have 0.10 times, what was that bottom revenue? 40,000 times 40,000 plus 0.20 times 50,000 plus 0.30 times 60,000, times 60,000 plus 0.20 times 70,000 plus 0.10 times 80,000. Okay? Now, if you are doing that on your calculator, you're wasting your time. Because if it's a symmetric distribution, it will always come out to be the middle number. So I know I don't even have to do that to know, because I did it symmetrically, and that'll be the way you always get it. It'll come out to be 60,000. It'll always be the center number. Don't kill yourself on this one. I mean, it's always going to be that center. So I've gotten that one down. It will be, if you work it out, I hope to God anyway, $60,000. Okay? $60,000. The center of this distribution is at 60,000 on that bell curve. Now comes the one that looks like a total pain in the back ass. as if they were the front. Never mind. You know what I mean. Get off. Okay? It's, and I'm going to write this in fancy notation here. It's the square root of the sum from k equals 1 to n of the probability of the kth event times the cash flow in that event minus the mean quantity squared. So you take each cash flow minus the mean, square it, times it by its probability, and then add all those up, and then take the square root. Now I'm going to do it the long way, and then I'm going to point out to you that you don't have to do it the long way. There's a shortcut. But if you were the kind of person who just kind of likes to do this kind of stuff, basically you have no life, you would do it like this. And believe me, before there were calculators and computers back in the day, you found every shortcut you could. And this was one of the famous ones. In this case, you would have 0.10 times the 40,000 minus the 60,000. You have to square it, plus the 0.20 times 50,000 minus the 60,000. And you square that, plus the 0.40 times the 50,000 minus the 50,000. And then you square that one. This is already like getting old. 0.20 plus 0.20 times the 70,000 minus the 60,000 squared, quantity squared, plus the 0.10 times the 80,000 minus the 60,000 quantity squared. You do that whole thing, and then you got your answer. Now, I want you to look carefully at it with me, and I'll show you why there's a real shortcut. First thing, do you notice that the center one will get a 0, 0 squared is 0? So I wouldn't ever, why would I ever do that one? That one's out. But something else I noticed too. Remember when you square, a negative goes away. 40,000 minus 60,000 squared is the same as 80,000 minus 60,000 squared. Also, 50,000 minus 60,000 squared is the same as 70,000 minus 60,000 quantity squared. So basically, the number I get here will be the same number I get here. And the number I get here will be the same number I get here. So why wouldn't I just do these two and then multiply the result times two? Let me make sure you see that. This number down here and this number down here are going to be the same number. Why would I do the same thing twice? Because it's fun? No! Don't. If I do this one, I just can say times two and I got that one. If I do this one, that will be the same number as that. So why don't I just do the two here on the top side of the distribution? Get 0.20 times 70,000 minus 60,000 quantity squared plus 0.10 times the quantity 80,000 minus 60,000 squared and then multiply the result times 2 before I take the square root. You have to do it before you take the square root. So what looks like an absolute beast, I don't have to do if I can just say times 2 on the result of the top 2. That will save an enormous amount of calculation on these. Of course, if you make a mistake here, you're dead, but, you know, that's what it is. So watch. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the square root of just two times, and I'm going to crank this out, and I really recommend that you do this with me, for one thing, to make sure if I did it right. But here we go. Just to make sure. I'm going to just do the top two, and that would be the 0.2 times the quantity, make sure you put in parentheses, 70,000, okay, 70,000 minus 60,000, close the parentheses and square it, plus And then I'm going to do 0.1 times the quantity 80,000 minus the 60,000. And I'm going to square that. I'm going to get my result. So finally, I will just do 2 times, what the heck is that number? Is that 60 million? Is that what you get? I think that's 60 million. This thing doesn't give me commas. Yeah, that's 60 million. So that would be then just the square root of 120 million. And I'm going to just take the square root of that. Second answer, square root second answer. And I get the final answer is $10,954.45. That is sigma. That's sigma. Let me roll that up a little bit there. Is that what you get? A couple of you are pushing that. Yeah. Okay, so before I do anything else, before I do any harder core metrics of risk, here's what I know. Remember that the mean was $60,000, right? Here's what I know right off the bat. 67% chance that I will be somewhere sales between 60,000 minus, really? So it was a 67% chance that my sales are going to be between $49,045, and $46, just round it. I mean, you're doing so much estimating here, just round it to the dollars. Some people even say, don't even worry about it, just say 49,000, but keep it there. And 60,000 plus $10,954.45. Which would take me up to $70,954, or $955. Round it to the whole number. Like I said, I mean, you're doing so much estimating here. Huh? Oh, I was wondering why people were standing up. I thought it was because they respected me. Okay. You know why this is important, and I actually, just telling you from my own business. These are rough back of the envelope calculations, but they tell you something really important. Because I can then say, okay, what are my fixed expenses? They're going to be there whether I have a dollar of sales or $1 million. If I were to say, well, my fixed expenses are going to run about $34,000 next year, well, I'd say, okay, I'm okay. There's a 67% chance I'll be able to cover them. I'm okay. Again, see what this says is, if there is a certain amount of bills I know I have to pay next year, am I in a comfort zone at 67% that I'm going to cover those bills? In this case, if this were my numbers, which actually aren't that too far off my actual real numbers, I'd say, yeah, I'm 67% sure I'll be able to do that. I'll be able to cover my fixed expenses, which means that I can keep the business going. Now, there's a 95% chance that I'm within 2 standard deviations of that mean of 60,000. So I'm going to just beat that out here. 60,000 minus 2 times that $10,954.45. So 38,000 on the downside, $38,091. On the upside, two standard deviations would be 60,000 plus two times that $10,954.45. So there I'd be at $81,908. Actually, $909, rounding it to one decimal, rounding it to the nearest dollar. So there you go again. Remember I said I think it was $38,000 in fixed expenses? Now I can say, well, just by a hair, I'm 95% sure that I'll be able to survive next year. That's where this kind of comes into use, and it's actually used. It's more of a small business type of person's type of little metric, but it gives you a sense that, okay, yeah, there's a 95% chance that I'm not going to go below my fixed expenses. That's a real nice comfort zone to have. And then it spreads out 99. I'm certainly not going to be able to say I'm 99% sure. But still, that's three standard deviations down and up. So if I did 60,000 minus three times $10,954.45, that would buy me 27,000. I'm 99% sure that I'll be above $137. And on the top side, $60,000 plus 10,000 three times. Come on, let's do three times. $10,954.45. So I'm 99% sure that I'll be somewhere between $27,137 and $92,863. That's 99. So I can't say I'm 99% sure that I'll survive fixed for the next year, but I'm 95% sure. And that also is something that you can show if I'm looking for some money from a bank, some lending from a bank. I can say, well, this is my projection for next year, and I can be 95% sure that I will be able to cover my fixed costs. That gives the bankers, when they look at my business statements, my pro formas, okay, we see these, we agree with your, we're okay with your projections, your probabilities, and that would give you a better chance of being able to get some working capital from a bank, is to be able to say there's a 95% chance I'll be able to cover myself enough to make it to the next day, to the next year. There you go. Okay, now. Here's the problem with this. These numbers right here, this standard deviation and this mean, these are completely dependent upon the company because they are dependent upon the revenues up here at the top, my projections. Say the 40, 50, 60. The problem would be, how would I compare this company to another company was very much like mine, but its revenues were maybe a little more or a lot more or a little less or a lot less. How do I compare companies if these numbers are dependent upon the specific company's projections? And that's where we come to the big one, the coefficient of variation, CV. It's a percentage. It comes out to be a percent. The coefficient of variation is nothing but the standard deviation scaled by the mean, sigma over mu. The standard deviation divided by the expected value. That's all it is. And then it's a percentage. And you can compare percentages for a little company and a massive company because they're all in the same units. They're percentages. The coefficient of variation is the metric of volatility risk. So in this case, I would work it out. It would be, in this company's case, it would be $10,954.45 over $60,000. Now, a little warning here before I do this. don't round along the way because you'll get an accumulation of rounding errors. When you report your answers to me, you give me 2 decimal places. But along the way, don't do that rounding because you could actually get a number that was pretty far off if you just keep chopping off decimal places along the way. In this case, I will get $10,954.45 divided by $60,000, and that's going to come out to be 18.26%. So my sales volatility in the standard metric of risk of internal business analysis is 18.26% sales risk. Sales risk is 18.2%. I was a long way around the barn to get to the outhouse on that. Really, that thing just doesn't want to stay off. It's convinced I just need it up there. Okay, there you go. 18.26%. And now let's work our way down the grinder. Let's take cost of goods sold. Is, let's say, 40% of sales. Okay. Our SG&A, this is, in other words, a variable expense. It will be a variable. For next year is going to be 15,000 dollars. So in other words, that is a fixed expense. And let's say that our interest payments for next year are $3,000. And finally, our taxes are 25% of EBT. By the way, what I'm going to do, I'm going to show you laying this out, but you'll have a sheet, a template, so that you can work everything out pretty easily doing it with my sheet. So let's do it. Sales. And I'm going to put up here the probabilities above on top. 0.10, 0.20, 0.40, 0.20, 0.10. Grind out my sales, which were 40,000, 50,000, 60,000, 70,000, and 80,000. Man, I'm going to have to do this even smaller than that. I'm sorry about this. I'm going to have to really tighten this up. Sales. To get the last two numbers in. 0.10, 40. 0.20 was 50. 0.30 is 60. 0.40, I'm sorry. 0.20 was 70, and 0.10 was 80,000. Now over here, what I'm going to do is put my mu, my sigma, and then my CV. And like I said, I'm going to give you a template so you can do this line by line on the template. Okay? Now I found the mean was 60,000. The standard deviation was 10,954.45, and my CV was 18.27. Was it 18.27%? 26? Okay, now watch how you do it. Just follow it. Monkey see, monkey do. For God's sake, don't think about what you're doing. You'll kill yourself. No, I'm serious. You just do this like a mechanical exercise. I've tried to think my way through it, and I go pig face blank. Minus, the next thing you're going to do is say minus variable cost. Okay? Remember, the variable cost was 40% of sales. Variable cost was 40% of sales. So 40% of 40,000 is 16,000. 40% of 50,000 is 20,000. If I stop for too long, someone actually wake me back up. 40% of 60,000 is 24,000. 40% of 70,000 is 28,000. And 40% of 80,000 is 32,000. Now you probably see, oh, well, wait, there was a pattern. You will not believe all the patterns that are going to show up here. So I'm going to take my gross. Really? Okay, 40,000 minus 16,000. What the hell is 24,000? I can do that. Jeez, I'm just blanking here. 30,000. Really? I am really in bad shape here. 42, right? 42,000. And the last one is 48,000. Okay, now, we are going at this line, we have to do mu, sigma, and CV again. Mu, sigma, and CV again. Now, the first thing is, can you tell me what the standard, what the expected value is? Do you have it? It's always the middle number. It's always the middle number. So it would be, in this case, I can't even read my own handwriting here, 36. It's always going to be the middle number. Don't bust your extra nut on that one, okay? I have got to stop talking without thinking, really. God. Okay. Now, watch how fast I do it and how wrong I get at doing it too fast. But what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say, all right, I know how to do this. To get that standard deviation, you just do the mean minus that squared times the probability plus the mean minus that one squared times the probability, times it by 2, take the square root. Okay? I do the mean minus the first number. Well, it doesn't matter which way I do it because I'm going to square it. Mean minus the first number squared times its probability plus the mean minus the second number squared times its probability. Get that number, times it by 2, take the square root. Watch and follow with me. So I'm going to take 36,000 minus the 60,000, doesn't matter which way I do it. I'm going to square that and then multiply it by 0.1. So 36,000 minus 24,000 squared, quantity squared, then times it by 0.1. And then I'm going to add to that the 36,000 minus 30,000. Square that, times it by 0.2. You should get 64,800,000. Times it by 2. And then take the square root of that. And I hope to God that comes out to be 11,384.20. Does it? $11,304.20. Did anyone get that same number, or did you get another number? Try it again. I want to make sure you're okay with this. We're going to, trust me, I will beat your ass on it. No. Well, follow with me here. We're going to do Just do the quantity on your calculator. 36,000 minus the 24,000. Mean minus the first number. Then square the result and times it by its probability, 0.1. So I'm going to do this 36,000 minus 24,000. I'm going to do that as a quantity, and then I'm going to square it, and then times it by 0.1. And then I'm going to do it for the next number up the grinder, plus the quantity 36,000 minus the 30,000. And I'm going to square that times 0.2. Add those two numbers up. You should get, that's not the same damn number I got last time. Will someone please tell me why I use crack before I come into class? Huh? No. No. That's like, how much did you make last year? Apples. I got 21,600,000. You got it? Oh, thank God. Someone got it. So you must be right. Really, you get that. One of the things you'll find is doing these on an Excel sheet makes it a lot easier to do them. Or just having the time to just sit down and have a couple of people do them together. And sort of, if none of you get the same answer, take the average, multiply by the page number. That's probably right. And then I'm going to times that by 2. And then I'm going to take the square root of that thing. There, that number looks better. That's the right number. I must have really screwed the pooch up there somewhere. 65, 72, 67. 65, 72, 67 is for the sigma. Now, the upshot of this, you're going to say, wait, what? Watch. I want the CV. Remember, the CV is the standard deviation divided by the mean. And the answer I get is 18.26%. Does that number look familiar? It's the same numbers I got for the sales volatility. Whenever you are taking away a variable expense, you are not magnifying the volatility. You are not causing any volatility to change because essentially my variable expenses, if my sales go down, variable expenses go down by the same amount. So it's actually, I don't worry about my variable expenses being what causing anything. Let me try this. The way I explain this, and it seems a little obtuse, but have you ever bungee jumped?
No.
There's something about bungee jumping that's really kind of weird. Okay, they show you these people off these bridges, and they go, doing, doing, bang, bang, bang. Okay? Well, you see, they don't tell you an interesting thing about bungee jumping. There's this law of physics. It's one of Newton's laws. An object in motion tends to stay in motion. So the parts of you that are rigid, they vary with you. They, bang, yeah. But the soft parts of you keep going in the direction you were headed. And they'll go for quite a while. You'll see parts of you go past your eyes. You're on your way up, they're still going down. That includes your liver, your turds, parts that I won't mention, they keep going. So you see, the problem is that it is those things that are fixed that don't go with you that are what can kill you in a business. If my sales go down and my variable costs will go down with them, they do not magnify risk at all. But those fixed expenses are what will break you. Like, for example, you come out of here. You have actually achieved a lot of credit and good grades here, and so you end up managing a Jiffy Lube on the south side of Memphis. Life is good for you. You're making $30,000 a year. And so you decide that it is time for you to take on some fixed debt. You know, buy a car. Okay, everything's fine, and also, you know, you've got some variable expenses too, driving to work every day. That's a variable expense. So if you lose your job at Jiffy Lube, you don't have to pay for gas anymore. So that variable expense won't hurt you, but that car payment is fixed. It's going to bite you in the ass. That's what will damage you. That's why when we talk about companies, we look at risk factors involving the fixed costs of this kind of a business. So if I were talking about something like a service-related industry where it's mostly, virtually all, in some cases, variable cost, they do not show as much risk profile as companies that are these big, heavy brick-and-mortar, plant and equipment, machinery kinds of companies. Because those kinds of companies, when their sales go down, they've still got this monstrous amount of property, plant, and equipment they've got to feed every day. So they have that big problem of a source of volatility and risk that a company that is mostly variable expenses doesn't have. This is why you see companies outsource. You see, when I hired you, I thought you were going to be a really great employee. But you see, you're a real dead weight on me. I have to pay you. And if I don't, you bitch at me. You know, and I'm tired of it. So I'm going to take my business to this, you're Chinese. I want to send my business over to China so that I move a fixed cost to a variable cost. It lowers my risk. You, go to hell. You, you're my friend. You see, because then I don't have to worry about it. If my sales go down, I just say, hey, you know what? Sucks to be you. I've moved my risk to you. And because you are so entrepreneurial, you have to be with that kind of a tie. I mean, really, clashes with everything in the universe? I like that. Swag? Yeah. Okay? Where the hell was it? Okay. You see, that's why the big reason you see that outsourcing of jobs. It is a way of transferring risk to another entity. Because now, if my sales go down, I don't care. I don't have to pay you anymore. If my sales go down with you, I just cut off my contract. You see, that sounds kind of sucky, but that's the dead-on calculus of outsourcing. It's not even about, well, it's so much cheaper in these other countries and all that. Yeah, that's there, but that's not the real fundamental reason. It's this mania has been going on really in earnest since the 1990s. And it turned into just like this obsession in the 2000s with the ability to move risk from someone who doesn't want it to someone who does want it. Derivatives are nothing but a way of moving risk from those who don't want it to those who do want it. Futures, options, all those kinds of things. So this thing with outsourcing, it's actually part of a much larger phenomenon, a trend, a craze. Oh, shut up. My God, get off me, dumbass. Oh.
X. There, that'll shut your ass up. I forgot to turn that off.
I hung up. Oh, sorry. Oh, where the hell am I? Yeah. Let's get the fixed cost down here. Now, this next CV that I'll get, that's going to be business risk. Because I'm going to be taking out a real live where the hell was my fixed cost? $15,000. So now I'm going to take out $15,000 from every one of these. A fixed amount of money goes off every one of these. Hang on. Ugh. Yeah, it's all snorts and giggles now, but you didn't just have Denny's pancakes come back and hit you in the face. Whoa. No, I'm serious, noobs. Nope, didn't help a damn bit. Oh well. Jack always helps. Okay, here we go. Take away 15 grand from every one of these numbers. We get 9,000, 15,000, 21,000. Really? 27,000? I almost had a roll. I was on a roll there. And 33,000. Woman, redeem yourself. What's the mean this time? Tell me what the mean is.
21.
Love it when you talk like that. Yes. $21,000. Okay, now we got to do the standard deviation shuffle again. Let's do it. Just walk it through with me, and for God's sake, watch me, because I did make a mistake the last time. So let's try to see if I can do it right this time. All I'm going to do is take 21,000, the quantity, 21,000 minus the 9,000 and square it times 0.1. Don't forget to multiply by the probability, plus the quantity, 21,000 minus 15,000. Oh, really? Minus 15,000. Close parentheses, square it times 0.2. And I get 21,600,000, really? Yeah. Okay, times 2. Remember, don't forget to multiply by 2 because you've got to go correct for not doing the other side of the symmetric distribution. So I'm going to do times 2. And I should get 43,200,000. So now I'm just going to take the square root of that number. And I get 6,572. Well, yeah, there's an interesting thing right there. Notice something interesting, and you don't have to remember this. 7,562.67. You'll notice, and if you really want to save time, you could remember that the standard deviation you got up here will be the same as the standard deviation down one line. You don't have to remember that. You can just do the calculation. But if you really wanted to trick it, this number, the mean, is easy. The standard deviation will be the same one you got up here. So what I'm going to do now is get my CV, which would be that 6,572.67 divided by 21,000. Yeah, there you go. 31.30. Look at that. 31.30%. CV went up. Just like I thought it would. Fixed expenses create more volatility. And now I can get my first number that's important. I got my sales risk was 18.26%. My full business risk, what we call business risk, is 31.30%. And now, if I take the difference of those two numbers, I will find out that my, what we call it, if I take the difference between the business risk and the sales risk, Or, you know, the sales risk is the same as the gross risk. This number, 13.04%, that's what we call the contribution of operating leverage. To business risk. But you can just say the contribution of operating leverage is 13.04%. In other words, the contribution of my fixed expenses is almost as much as the risk of my sales. In this company actually, you almost doubled the risk of this company just because of your fixed expenses. Now, you might not be able to get rid of those fixed expenses, or you might say, no, we don't want that kind of risk. That's magnifying a risk that we could outsource fixed costs, or we could reduce our physical brick and mortar presence and move more of our stuff to the web. One way or the other, you have to make a decision here. Now that I can actually see that my business risk is almost twice as much, not quite twice as much, but it is a heck of a lot higher than just the risk of my sales going up and down. So I have created volatility through the fixed expense. Notice the variable expenses didn't do that. Fixed expenses did. Now there will be one more thing that we want to do here. And we're going to want to take out now the interest expense. So we're going to take out, this would be EBIT that we just got. So we're going to minus the interest expense. That's going to be a fixed expense too. You have to pay it no matter what. So that was $3,000. That's $3,000 all along the line. So I go down to 6,000, 12,000, 18,000, 4,000, and 30,000. Now this is going to be tricky here. What's the mean on this line? What's the EBT mean? Can you tell me that without calculating it? What's the EBT mean? What's the mean I'm going to get here? Each of these times its probability, what will it be? It'll be 18,000. See, you don't ever have to calculate that. As long as it's a symmetric distribution, just make sure of that, and it always will be. Even out in the business world, there we do it symmetric. Now we are going to crank out the last volatility. Walk with me. I'm going to do it nice and clean. I'm going to do 18,000 minus 6,000 quantity squared times 0.1 plus the quantity 18,000 minus 12,000 quantity squared times 0.2. I'll take that result, times it by 2, and then I'll take the square root of it. And something surprising will happen. Looky there. You seen that number, 6572, 60.67, before? Once you've got the standard deviation, it'll stay the same. Yeah. Earnings before taxes.
And then the one above interest?
Earnings before interest and taxes. Yeah. EBT. That's the same thing as operating income. We use the two terms interchangeably, although technically I've had been yelled at that they're not the same. For all intents and purposes, operating income is EBIT, EBIT. So suddenly, you notice that once you have gotten one standard deviation, taking away fixed costs leaves the spread alone, because all you're doing is moving the distribution down like this. It's not spreading it out. So taking away fixed cost actually leaves the standard deviation the same because it's just shifting the whole distribution, leaving its shape intact. But because your mean is lower, the CV will be higher. So in this case, I take 6572.67 divided by 18,000, and I get 36.51%. And now I'm about done, because this number right here, 36.51%, that's EBT risk. If I take that number minus business risk, I will get 5.21%. I'm sorry, yeah, 5.21%. That is the contribution of financial leverage to overall risk. Now, notice that the contribution of financial leverage is not nearly as bad as the contribution of operating leverage. So in other words, the greatest source of magnification of risk in this company isn't its debt and the interest you have to pay. It is the physical brick and mortar and fixed costs this company incurs in its operations. Now, why am I not going to bother with doing minus the taxes? Why do I already know what the coefficient of variation is? I can tell you what the coefficient of variation is. It's minus taxes is net income. I can tell you the CV of net income right now. It's 36.51%. Why is the coefficient of variation at net income going to be the same as the CV of EBT? Do you see it? Yeah? Well, spank me hard and call me Norma. You understand. It's a man thing, bro. Yeah. See, because taxes actually don't create risk. As long as the taxes are a variable that rises and falls with the taxable income, the taxes don't create any added risk. It's your interest and your fixed cost of operations that magnify risk. My net income CV, I could even do that as a trick question. I give you all these CVs, but I don't give you the net income CV. Well, what's the net income CV? Oh, well, what was the EBT risk? Oh, there it is. I got it. So that's where you get. Now, what I'm going to do, I think I'll do it like this. I'm going to just give you a practice problem to do for the weekend. It won't be a quiz. I'll just give you a practice problem and a template, and you try to get the answers, and then I'll give you the answers on Tuesday. That's all I have for you today. All right, thank you.